Okay, so anyway, if you're here and you're expecting a polished product, you've already discovered that ain't us. We are just kind of more of an organic body together, worshiping the Lord and trying to figure out life together. We're at different places in our faith journey. And so we've been starting, like last week, we started this series saying, belong, believe, become. And so on that next slide, you'll see that we've been talking about creating three atmospheres. And last week we did the first one, which was belong. And we said that everybody belongs. The cross of Christ is there for everyone to approach. It doesn't isolate. So everyone is welcome. So that first one, when you click it, you will see it says foyer. Our foyer of our house is a place where we're trying to make sure that people feel welcome, right? And so we discussed how Sunday mornings, we want people to know, you guys, feel at home, relax. If you're worried about all the religiosity, all the ritual and stuff, that ain't us. Thanks, Brad. I was being blinded by a windshield. And so today, we're going to move from the foyer to the living room. Now, last week, we didn't get done until 11:13. It was late because we did this thing where we handed out boxes, and I timed it out to be like 5 minutes. And boy, it was a lot of fun, but it took about 15 minutes. So this week, I shortened things up and said, okay, let's just in case. So I might actually get you out even a little early. It's not a promise, but, you know, we'll try. I'll try hard. And our Ukul, she did a great job. She, you know, it was quick, so that was good. And so next week, we'll be talking about moving into the kitchen. So we got foyer, living room, kitchen. Our foyer is where we say, welcome, come on in. And then our living room is where we become friends. We start developing relationships with each other. We start getting to know each other, okay? And then in the kitchen. That's where the recipe is made, right? The recipe is made in the kitchen. And you can think of it, a lot of people have kitchens where they'll have a dining room table, you know, in their kitchen or a kitchen table that you sit around. And that's where you usually eat. And your formal dining room, if you have one, that's where you store your laundry and other projects that need to be done, unless somebody's coming over that gets the fancy dining room. Okay, and the kitchen is where we start talking about things that are hard, you know, the real tough questions. It's where we hammer stuff out. We also talked last week about this next slide where we said, this is our mission statement as a church. This is what we do. We compared it to a mission statement that I saw hanging on the wall at another church as you came in that was really long and nobody could remember it, but it concluded everything. And we said, love God. Love people, live like Jesus. And we took that out of Matthew 22, 36 through 40. Where this lawyer guy, an expert in the law, he comes and Jesus is talking and Jesus is teaching. And this lawyer guy, who's an expert, says, hey, okay, let's find out. What do you think is the most important commandment? Which is the best one? Which is the one we really need to focus on? And so he was trying to trick Jesus into giving the wrong answer. And here's what Jesus did. He said, I tell you that the greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And he said, that's the first and greatest. And then he said, and the second one, equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so the lawyer said, okay, but who's my neighbor? Who's my neighbor? And that's when Jesus told the Good Samaritan story. Now here's the rub. The Good Samaritan story. Samaritans, the Jews did not like them at all. There was like classism, racism, all these things that were barriers to say Jews won't even touch a Samaritan. So Jesus tells the story of the Samaritan, the Good Samaritan, in answer to who is my neighbor, he makes the guy who was beat up, robbed, and bloody on the side of the road, he makes him our neighbor and says the Good Samaritan was the example of how we love our neighbor. See what he's doing there? You're kind of making the Samaritan is the hero of the story. So you see the three different places. And then we have this logo that I always want to explain like once a year. And the first part of it, you've seen this, right? You've seen this different places on our sign. It's different spots. The first thing is we say the cross. The cross. We are a grace-saturated people who believe Jesus' sacrifice on the cross is enough. That Jesus paid the price. He said, here it is, here's my sacrifice, and this is what gets us into an eternity with God. And in fact, in Ephesians 2:8, it says, it's by grace you've been rescued through faith. And it's not something you've done, lest any man would boast. It's not anything you've done, because you're humans and you would brag about it. And you know, we have a lot of people, not in our church, but in other churches, who brag about all the good they do. And people who think, I do good things, good stuff, good. I give enough money, so I'm going to heaven. No, Jesus said that it's the cross, okay? His sacrifice. By giving his life, Jesus did all that was needed. It is not what we do, but what Jesus did. And then that second thing that you see is a bridge. That bridge is our connecting bridges. Our connecting bridges. It says, we believe in community and shared life. We strive to love God with everything and love others like we love ourselves. We are relational bridge builders. Bridge builders. And the last one that we look at, we see growth. By following Jesus and living like him, we see growth and change in our lives. We find purpose, meaning, and direction, and are able to better face life's challenges with confidence. See, Jesus said in John 16:33, he said, John 10:10, I believe. Somebody look up, find out where this is. But I believe it's 10:10, where he said, I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly. Overflowing. Said John, I think John 16:33 is the one where he promises, in this life you're going to have troubles, but take heart, I've overcome the world. Is it John 10:10? Did somebody find it? Yes, but I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Right? And then that's the growth that we find, that life with Christ, following what he said, is better. It's better. I mean, since I was 17, and it's, that was when it kind of took hold for me. I've lived all of these years having the strength and knowing that if I follow Christ and do and love people like he loved, try to live my life like him, that my life, I just feel like it's just so much, it's just, I love it. I love it. See, when I was 17, you know, London, what are you, 16, 15? 15. And Ella just turned 18. How old are you, Kens? 17. Okay, so I was 17. All right? And my youth leaders were like, okay, we're going on a retreat to the White Mountains. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Scott, you need to go. Well, I checked with all my friends in youth group, and none of them were going. It was just all the little kids. The 6th, 7th graders were going. And here I was, 6, 7. Here I was going, I'm 17, and no way, I don't want to go. This is going to be lame. But my youth leader said, hey. My youth leader said, come on, you're going to like it. It's going to be great. Well, we did the two-hour drive into the White Mountains someplace. I don't know where it was. And we're pulling into the retreat center. We've got all these 6th through 8th graders in our big van, and me and a couple of youth leaders. And we're driving in, And as we're driving in, I'm seeing kids on the basketball courts. I'm seeing kids over here in the soccer field. And I quickly discovered that we were bringing the oldest group. All those kids were like third, fourth, fifth graders. I was like, oh my, this is gonna be lame. And I looked at my youth leader and I was like, seriously? Seriously? He said, no, it's gonna be okay. Gonna be okay. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. We went into our cabin and we're going up, and I remember it was up above a barn where they had their meeting stuff, and we're going into and seeing the bunks, and we get in and I look up above and along the seam, there are bats. There are bats. I'm okay with bats because, like, we would play tennis and the bats would swoop at us like this while we're, and so we had fun with them. We'd try to hit the ball up in the air and see if we could get a bat to dive at it. And bats, my friends and I, we were okay with bats. You know, they get a bad rap. Their bats are okay. But do you think all of these 6th through 8th graders were excited about it? No, they start freaking out. They start talking to the director. Hey, do you know there are bats up there? The director, being from New Hampshire, being, 40 years ago, was like, yeah, they live there. They live there too. Don't worry. As soon as you guys go to bed, they leave for the night and go out eating bugs all night. And so you really won't see much of them. You're fine. Okay. So we had bats in our belfry. So it came to the end of the program for the evening, and we got all these little kids around. And it was 9 o'clock. And they said, all right, time to go back to your cabins and have lights out. I'm 17. Lights out at 9 o'clock? And all these little kids are like, oh, we're staying up late. It's 9 o'clock. Woo! Let's party. Our group is like, yeah, 9 o'clock's fine. That's all right. And we're, I'm looking at my youth leader like, are you serious? And he says, hey, Scott, come here. Do you want to stay up with us? Some of the youth leaders are staying up. We're going to play cards down here. We're going to have some coffee or whatever you want to. And I was like, yeah, of course I do. Of course I do. And so I stayed up with this group of 10 or 12 people that were probably all mostly in their 30s. They were all in their 30s, maybe a couple in their young 40s. And I just kind of watched. I remember that was really my first drink of coffee. I thought it was nasty, but I drank it because I'm like, I'm one of these. I'm hanging out with you guys, and here we are drinking our coffee, playing cards, and something was happening there. They were talking about life, and they were talking about their lives, and they were involving their walk with God. They were talking about, like, their marriages and saying, you know, we're really trying to make Jesus the center of our marriage, the center of our family. And for me, this was like all new, because in my family, though my mom and dad were members of the board and dad was the treasurer, we would go to church and they'd do the parent thing where they'd transform when they walk through the door and be like on the way in, we're like screaming at each other, and walk through the door and, hey, brother, praise the Lord. What a glorious day. And I would be like, what? What did these people just become? And I'd never seen people who were like living it. But that night, they included me in their circle. They invited me into the living room and said, come sit with us. Come be with us and be part of our group. And you know what started happening? As I started to believe this Jesus stuff was transformative. And it was at that point, at that lame weekend retreat, where I prayed a prayer and said, God, whatever you want to do with my life, it's yours. You got it. I'm going to follow you. Now, did I immediately become like a perfect person and a priest? And no, I went to college. I spent the first year and a half drunk. I, you know, did all the things. But God never left me. Never turns his back on me. So when we look at these three atmospheres, we see 1 John 4, 7, and 8. It says this, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God, because God is love." I want to convince you somehow this morning in these final 10 minutes or so, I want to convince you somehow that there's life with Christ beyond sitting in these hard ancient wooden pews for an hour a week. That there's something real to be had. There's a walk to have. It's a belong, believe. So today we're moving into the living room and looking at three quick truths. The first one is, you are not created to live life alone. In Genesis 1:8, it's where God created Adam's soulmate. And before you get all mushy romantic, it's not a soulmate like you're talking. It's talking about a partner that completes you. You know, it's a partner that you walk with. It's not a subjugated lower than person. Okay, in Genesis 1:8, it's where he looked and he said, "It's not good for man to be alone." But here's the thing, our society more and more is isolating all of us. We are getting more and more isolated. In Proverbs 18:1, it says, "A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment." And so before we go into the living room, I'd like you to take a picture of what the Bible tells us this person, this enemy of our souls, uses to defeat us, to keep us from living the life that Jesus wants for us. So this slide here, am I falling in for any of the five D's? The first one, distort. The second one, distract. The third one, discourage. The fourth one, deceive. The fifth one, divide. Man, when I look at these as Satan's biggest tricks to try to get you offline, I'm like, if I was going to describe our news cycle right now, our governments, both sides, Democrat, Republican, looking at everything that's going on, I see a lot of this news distorted. We get distracted from this and that by this latest thing that comes out. I don't know about you, but sometimes I get so discouraged. Speaking to one of my therapists this week, Chelsea over here, you know, we're commiserating, talking about the food pantry, which, by the way, thank you so much for bringing in food. We're going to need it. We've got 42 million Americans that are about to lose this benefit they had that helped them with supplemental food. They didn't provide all their food. And I know, there's 1% of them that are gaming the system. I'm more concerned about the other 99%. So we're expecting our food pantry to have to meet more needs. So I look at all of these and I say, wow, okay, that's what Satan's doing. So when we look at the next slide, these three truths, you were not created to go it alone. Number two, community brings growth. We saw last week, we looked at this in Acts chapter 2. All the believers were together, had everything in common. Okay? They had everything in common. They were anxiously, looking for what God would teach them through the word and in the temple. But then they were going home and breaking bread with each other. And still being like the people that were my youth leaders that night. They were like, our faith goes through beyond just a Sunday morning. And look at that last part, that people looked at this and said, wow, I want that. I want that. Daily, people were being added to their number because we're lonely. We're not lonely. In Hebrews 10:19, on this next slide, it says this, let us hold unswervingly. Let us hold unswervingly in verse 23 to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let's consider how we can spur one another on, encourage one another. Let us consider how we can do that. Let's not give up meeting together. Do you know what is so hard? It's like shouldn't be this way, but when we are struggling the most is when the enemy says, stay home. Stay home. You're in no condition to go to church. You're in no condition to be with others. Stay home. Stay home. But we should be bringing it here so that we say, lean on me when you're not strong. You want me to keep going? No. All right. So let's hold that unswervingly. And so that third thing, taking steps, is up to each of us. You know, the thing about Christianity, it doesn't force itself on others. Now, I know right now we have a lot of confusing signals going on of trying to force others into our behavior and force this and force that and legislate things. I know it's very difficult and confusing, but I challenge you to look at any time the Hebrew nation did that or was directed to. Where to call people to Jesus. And then the Holy Spirit convicts people through life, right? Life with Him. So we've got to dig in our heels with determination that we will not be isolated. So that next slide, that determination, nothing will pull me off course. I'm going to share life. I'm going to look at how can I get involved and be part of things. Yesterday, we did cleanup day. It was awesome. I loved it. We got so much stuff done. But you know what I loved more? Was seeing teams of people getting together and hearing their laughter and hearing them work together and do things together. We met people we didn't know very well. And we worked with each other. That's the type of thing that defeats isolation.